From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast, our series of live in-studio performances. I'm John Schaefer. Meredith Monk has spent much of the past 50 years in the vanguard of American music. A vocalist who's explored new sounds, an award-winning composer, a filmmaker, a pioneer in multimedia, her work has had a much broader impact than just among avant-garde circles. Her music has appeared in Coen Brothers films. It's been sampled by DJ Shadow and remixed by DJ Spooky, among many others. Her latest project is called Cellular Songs, and she and the women of her long-standing vocal ensemble are here in our studio to perform some of them. Beginning with Trio Number 1, here's music by Meredith Monk. Ha-ya, ha-ha-ha-ya, hoo-wee, ha-hoo-wa, ha-ha-ha-hoo-wee, ha-ha-ha-ya, ha-ha-ha-ya, ha-ha-ha-hoo-wee, ha-ha-ha-hoo-wee, ha-ha-ha-ya, ha-ha-ha-ya. That is Meredith Monk and members of her vocal ensemble. And Wow. Nicely done.
Thank you.
From Cellular Songs, that is Trio Number One. Meredith Monk singing with Allison Sniffen and Katie Geisinger, and also you'll be meeting in a moment and hearing in a moment Ellen Fisher and Joe Stewart, all members of your longstanding vocal ensemble, Meredith. You've been doing this so long. One of the challenges, and we've been doing things here in the studio together for so long, one of the challenges is remembering that every time you're here, someone is hearing you for the first time. And, you know, that piece, that Trio Number One from Cellular Songs, is a great example of a number of things that you have pursued in your music over the years. Yeah. The way the three voices kind of produce a single line and suggest language without ever actually giving us a word. You know, those are things that have been constant in your music. Tell us a little bit about Cellular Songs as a project. First of all, the title.
Well, I was working on that piece and two other ones, and I was laying tracks on my little four-track tape recorder that I still use because a computer is too slow, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because in the analog equipment, I can just go record when I get an idea, and with a computer, I've got to set it all up, and are you going to do a song that's in 4/4? I have no idea, like when I'm working on a song, so I still use that very, very funky technology. So I was making these little pieces myself, and at the same time, I was reading an amazing book called The Emperor of All Maladies by Siddhartha Mukherjee, which is a history of cancer, but I just started getting really interested in how intelligent cells were, and the complexity within one cell. To make that function, there has to be a sense of cooperation and very interdependent processes, and the movement and the way that it has to perceive. I mean, it literally is like an intelligent being, and that's the basic unit of life. So I started getting really interested in that. And then as I was reading it, I was thinking, well, this reminds me of these little songs I'm working on. So the year that was my 50th anniversary year, when we were doing these big concerts at Carnegie, it was a lot of retrospective, you know, looking back, but I just wanted to do something new. So, I mean, I wanted to perform it. And so Allison and Katie and I did this piece and one other one for the first time. So it's what I love about it is that you can listen five times and you could follow maybe Allison's voice, the strand of that, or the next time you follow Katie's voice, or you follow my voice. But if you listen as a whole, you literally can't tell who's singing what.
Right. And you know, there's a technique known as hocketing, where which you have done many times. Where, you know, a line is split between two or three voices.
Right.
And we've talked a little bit about this in the past. For that to really come off, if you're, like, counting and thinking, it's never going to work.
I know.
You just have to, like, be in the moment and feel it, right?
It's like a moving meditation. You know, it's like you're moving, but it's you have to stay in that meditative state of mind, because if a thought comes in, boing, you know, you're out. You know, it's kind of like musical chairs. You're out. So that's also such a wonderful thing to work on. And I just feel so blessed to work with these beautiful people.
All of whom are women. I can't help noticing there are no Johns or Bobs or Randalls.
Right.
How did that decision come into play?
I think I just started thinking about what's going on in the world, like we all are as artists. You know, how do you contend with what's going on in the world? And I was already, so this is 2016, and even a little bit before, feeling this patriarchal kind of weight coming back in, you know, in a very strong way, and things getting, in a way, flattened for women, and, you know, women not having that sense of the space to be whole. Because my feeling is, if women can be whole, then men can actually be more whole.
Sure.
You know, so it's when women.
So it's not a zero sum game.
It's not a zero sum. You know, a gain on one half, the other half gains also, is the way I think about things. So, and I was just getting very discouraged about, you know, this kind of value system of greed and competition and cruelty. And so I just felt that it was very nice to do a piece with all women, and in a sense as a kind of prototype of another possibility of the way a society could work. And I was also thinking about how in our bodies there's billions of cells, and they are all cooperating to make life. So you know, if you use that as a metaphor of our ecology and our world, to me, that's, you know, remarkable.
Did you hear recently, speaking of ecology, they found a huge termite colony that had no males?
Ooh!
No males at
wow.
all.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somehow this was like, you know, a productive working mm-hmm. colony, and but it had no males.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean,
I have to admit, I gulped pretty hard when I read that.
There's some gulp. I mean, I, you know, the way that I feel is I just don't like exclusion on any level. Yeah. So I gulp also. But at the same time, you know, I think what's really nice about all the music from Celio's songs is that the effort of putting it together and singing it, you can tell that we all have to roll up our sleeves.
Yeah.
And that's intrinsic to the forms. And I think that's a beautiful also way of seeing what's possible in our world.
It also seems to follow on from two of your more recent big projects, mm-hmm. Mercy, which mm-hmm. was also a response to, you know,
cruelty.
A specific bit, you know, example of cruelty mm-hmm. in the Middle East, and On Behalf of Nature, mm-hmm. your response to climate change.
That, you right.
know, so these are big ideas mm-hmm. that inhabit what might seem to be, you know, kind of abstract musical
right.
exercises.
Exactly, yeah.
And that also, that yin and yang yeah. of the abstract and the narrative.
Exactly, because I am I'm a musician. I'm not like a playwright or somebody who, you know, I mean, I love writing and I write articles, but in my work, I trust that nonverbal communication because I feel that it's more universal mm-hmm. and that people can find their own space within it to respond the way that they want to. So it's not manipulative in any way. And so I think part of my struggle, you know, even with On Behalf of Nature, is what do you do in this world where we are, it is very dark, and how do you, as an artist, give something that does something, you know, mm-hmm. that, so I think there's two branches. One branch is people that really work politically in a very direct way and say what's there in a very honest way. And I think that's a very verbal kind of artist. But for me as a musician, I just feel like what I want to do is to, in a way, suggest the miracle and the wonder of life. And then, for example, and On Behalf of Nature, suggesting the rhythms of nature and the kind of beauty of nature. And then maybe you'd go home and think about it and do something about it. You know. And the same with Celio's songs. I think right now we need I feel like we need an affirmation of life itself. I think we're missing wonder in our society, you know, and imagination and magic. You know, because the phones are just filling everything in, you know. So I feel like art has that other kind of quality of giving you space to be who you are, maybe if it's only for an hour or whatever it is. But still, if you experience that and you have that healing feeling from seeing an artwork, maybe you'd find little ways of getting that more into your life.
We're speaking with Meredith Monk about Celio's songs, which is a multimedia piece.
Yes.
I mean, because of the complexity, the intricacy of the music, the staging for this one is relatively restrained.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's interesting, and I also felt that in On Behalf of Nature, is when you have music that's very complex, how do you make the other elements transparent so that you actually can hear it? Because in our world, we're used to having, once music comes on, and or if there are images, the music becomes the accompaniment. That's just how we're brought up visually. So how do you do a piece where there are beautiful elements that are visual, but at the same time you have space to hear the intricacy of the music?
Yeah. So you're performing this residency at Le Poisson mm-hmm. Rouge here in Manhattan through Tuesday, mm-hmm. October 15 and 16, with these musicians.
With these beauties, yes.
So let's bring the whole quintet. Allison Sniffen has made her way over to our piano and has her violin in hand. So there is some instrumental sound here.
Mm-hmm.
There are also words.
Yes.
Which you have always approached with caution.
Yes, with caution. I usually work with lists.
Yeah.
You know, a repetition kind of, you know, idea, more like chanting rather than words as narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this seems to be another case in point.
Yes.
All right. It's called Happy Woman. And Ellen Fisher, Joe Stewart, Katie Geisinger joining Meredith Monk and Allison Sniffen here in the studio. Let's hear another live performance of an excerpt from Meredith's latest project called Celio's Songs.
I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman. I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a happy woman, I'm a happy woman. Oh, I'm a hungry woman, I'm a hungry woman. Oh, I'm a hungry woman, I'm a hungry woman. Oh, I'm a hungry woman, I'm a hungry woman. Oh, I'm a hungry woman, I'm a hungry woman. Hey, you, ha, ha, hey, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, hey, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, hey, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, ha. Oh, I'm a tender woman, I'm a tender woman. Oh, I'm a thinking woman, I'm a thinking woman. Oh, I'm a sassy woman, I'm a sassy woman. Oh, I'm a patient woman, I'm a patient woman. Oh, I'm a thieving woman, I'm a thieving woman. I'm a shaky woman, I'm a shaky woman. Oh, I'm a lucky woman, I'm a lucky woman. Oh, I'm a needy woman, I'm a needy woman. Oh, I'm a greedy woman, I'm a greedy woman. Hey, you, ha, ha, hey, ha. Hey, you, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, hey, ha. Hey, you, ha, ha, ha.
Music once again from Meredith Monk and her vocal ensemble live here in our studio from Cellular Songs. That is called Happy Woman, and a relatively rare example, Meredith, of actual words, you know, a list But also within that list, the kind of full range of emotions, you know, I'm a sassy woman and there's a little swivel of the hips when you sing that, to, you know, rhyming thieving with grieving, you know. I mean, this...
It was a fantastic process to make this piece. I got it from some other dimension because I was meditating one day and the thought came into my mind that, you know, when you're meditating, you label it thinking and go back to your breath. But the thought that came to my mind was, I've just had so much love in my life, you know, no matter, you know, illness, this, loss, and everything else that we all go through. But I feel like I've been so blessed to have a life full of so much love, love of what I do and love of the people around me. So after I finished meditating, for some reason, I have no idea, I also have one of those little tiny recording devices. That is a digital one.
Okay.
A little Sony. It's this big, a little stick.
Yeah.
And for some, I think as I was thinking, well, I'm going to record this just so that I remember when I'm feeling blue that I can listen to this. So I was running around the house going, oh, I'm a happy woman. I'm a happy woman. And then I didn't think about it at all. And I was in New Mexico working on cellular songs, and I was listening to that device to find some other material for another piece. And I listened to it and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. You know, there's something interesting in this. I don't know if it's for this piece, but I'm going to continue working on it. So I sat at the piano, and then one day I was working on it and all of a sudden I'm a Hungry Woman came out.
Mm.
And I got the image of, you know, the Dorothea Lange photograph of the woman from Appalachia. You know, she's very thin and you can see she hasn't, you know, she's been starving.
Is this like a depression?
From the depression, black and white.
Yes.
So that came, and then I started thinking about women in Africa, Syrian women, you know, just hungry women, you know, all over the world. And so then I started thinking, this is a song for all women, and yet it's, you know, I'm saying I rather than they or she, but I started realizing that it had that layer of speaking for all the women and the qualities that women all over the world have, but it also is within each of us. We have so many qualities, right. And sometimes they're contradictory, and, you know, we have all kinds of qualities. And in this patriarchal world, we're getting so flattened out. You know, I say it's like we're getting flattened out into a pancake Barbie doll. You know, that's what it feels like. Not us, but I mean, we won't give into that. But I mean, I'm just saying, you know, the sensibility of the culture or something like that. And so I realized that it was speaking for one person and not necessarily me. But, you know, a woman, and speaking for all women. So I was running around saying, oh, I'm a tender woman, I'm this woman. And I wrote, I don't know, 100 words down, and then tried to see what would be the ones that were the most essential. And then the rhyming idea came up, but just every once in a while.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, you know, cellular songs as a title not only goes to the biology you were talking about, cells and how complex they are and the way they have to work with each other. It's also a good description of certain kinds of music.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And the way a musical cell will develop in your music has been something that I don't know whether that occurred to you when you named the piece.
Not right when I was making it, but then later on I also thought, you know, isn't it interesting that a cell is the basic unit of life, but you could say a cell is the basic unit of music.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, and it can be a very short cell. It doesn't matter how many notes in that cell, but that's kind of an organizational principle of music, and it's also an organizational principle of life itself. So,
right.
It's got a lot in there.
I mean, if you think of, you know, the four note descending cell of Einstein on the beach, that, and, you know, and Philip Glass spins 5 hours of music out of that cell, you know. Now, speaking of you know, multimedia and image-based pieces, I see that you're restoring Quarry.
Eventually, yeah, we're working on that. And again, that came up a lot as a response to what's going on in the world, because I think that even in those days, in the mid-70s, I was very aware of these cycles of dark times that recur. They spiral around. And, you know, the impulse of that piece was that I had toured for the first time in the early 70s, and our first place that we performed was in Nancy, which is in the Alsace area of France. And that's an area that was France, then it's Germany, then it's France, then it's Germany. You know, it just went back and forth. And I noticed that there were men, middle-aged men, hardly any that I saw on the streets and everything. So I asked people, why are there so few men of that age? And they said, well, it's the two world wars. And so then I started thinking about that. And so I just feel that it's such an interesting piece to bring back now, because the piece is, it's inspired by World War II, but it's not limited to that, because the dictator is not, you know, it's not like we're trying to pretend it's a German
right.
situation, but it has some of those elements, again, abstracted.
Right.
And also, my friend Paul Langland, who was in my ensemble for many years, a wonderful teacher and performer, taught it out at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. They said, we'd like you to do a part of Quarry for our recital or their, you know, dance concert. And I said, well, I think I'd like to try to do the dictator's speech, which is this nonverbal harangue,
mm-hmm.
the dictator's speech and his movement harangue, and the rally, which is kind of based on the Hitler Youth rallies. And the last image is after this guttural movement and very violent and athletic movement, very, very, I think what was scary about it was how easy it was to do this very, very mesmerizing thing and how exciting it is, which they knew. The Germans definitely knew that. At the end, everybody melts and they get these suitcases and they become people that are going to be taken away. So it's like the victors become the victims. And the thing that was so extraordinary was it was done, you know, at the University of Michigan in their theater, dance, and music department on the day of that immigration, you know, that where everybody was at the airports being turned away.
Right, right.
And it was so shocking. And also, I thought that was so interesting to teach young people, number one, the way we worked and work, a kind of philosophy of art that, you know, you really can work in a very pure way and you know, follow your own dream. But the other thing I thought was interesting about doing it is teaching them about history, which is not really taught that much now.
Yeah.
So those kids were so into it. I literally was in tears watching the rehearsal. I mean, they just took the ball and ran with it. It was really amazing. And even one of the young students did the dictator, and Ping Chong was the original dictator, which he was magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
This young man, he was transformed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just unbelievable.
It also reminds me of your film Book of Days,
mm-hmm.
where again there's this playing with time,
mm-hmm.
and you know the idea that just because this is a Jewish girl in a medieval ghetto doesn't mean she's just a Jewish girl.
Yeah, because I was thinking about AIDS. I was thinking actually about how these diseases seem to come up at these different times and why, and then also the scapegoating.
Yeah.
That happens when things come in there, you know, that are hard for society.
So with Quarry now being kind of restored, you're trying to get it from 16-millimeter film to DVD, right? That's
yes.
the process. How much, I mean, you've got 50 years of archives now. I mean,
they're funky, though.
So is there a Meredith Monk archive?
We're working on it. Yeah, the Library of Performing Arts and the music department and the dance department and the theater department, you know, you can get it from those different areas. They have some stuff till 2006, so
mm-hmm.
they have up to 2006. Not everything, because I have to keep some stuff when I'm working on stuff.
Sure.
So they do have that, but we are working on now trying to do a digital archive that people can really access, you know, online, like all kinds of photographs and, you know, and notebooks and all kinds of things.
Yeah. And since you've been writing now more music for other ensembles, you know, orchestral pieces, mm-hmm. string quartets, piano
yeah.
instrumentals, you've had to do a lot more notation. Has that changed the way the writing process works for you?
Not really, because this is my genius over here,
Allison okay.
Sniffen, who, you know, somehow can make some kind of sense out of my scribblings or my tapes. And so that could not even be done without her.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, to be totally honest with you, I just love working with my own group the best.
Yeah.
I wanted to expand my, well, like, for example, the instrumental writing. You know, working on the orchestra pieces have been, you know, that's been wonderful. And Michael Tilson Thomas, you know, for 5 years was saying, you have to do an orchestra. I mean, he was not going to take no for an answer.
Right,
so I was,
right.
Oh, okay, I'm going to do it. And then I started really thinking about instruments as voices, and that was really wonderful, and started learning what they can do. And that's been great, because that can also come right back to the ensemble, because then I have John Hollenbeck, and I have Bodan Hillesh, and I have Allison Sniffen. So we can take some of those principles and make that richer. But ultimately, this is my family,
yeah.
you know, and we know what we're doing for so many years. It's almost like a psychic shorthand. And not that every piece is the same. We're, you know, it's starting from scratch every time, but it's just this kind of way of working that's so satisfying to me.
Yeah.
I'm so blessed.
Well, this next piece that the five of you are going to do together is, again, a great example of that.
Yeah.
Nyem doesn't mean anything, and therefore can mean anything.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm probably going to make other titles for these pieces, but the Nyem is just a sound.
Right.
And I think this piece has the most quality of the cellular kind of activity or the motor of life. You know, it really has that quality that, you know, underneath, in our bodies now, we're not hearing it, but there's a kind of motor that's going on that we're not even aware of, that energy.
And constant motion.
And constant motion. So, you know, and so I think this piece really captures that.
All right, let's bring the five singers back. And for those of you watching on YouTube or Facebook, going from your left to right, it's Allison Sniffen, Meredith Monk, Joe Stewart, Ellen Fisher, Katie Geisinger from the Meredith Monk Vocal Ensemble. And this piece called Nyem is from Cellular Songs. It's the latest work by Meredith Monk, and she will be performing it with the ensemble the 15th and 16th here in New York at Le Poisson Rouge. Here's a live performance of Nyem.
Yummy, 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 y
Wow. That is more music from Meredith Monk and her vocal ensemble from Cellular Songs. That is called Nyem. And I can't imagine what you're asking everybody to be physically doing on stage while they're also keeping track of the ins and outs of the entrances in that piece.
They're more like almost geometric kind of configurations with just a tiny bit of movement. But the third one, we're lying down on the ground, like on our sides, and then 10 young women, five teenagers and five little ones, come in and join us.
Oh.
And so we're spread out all over the space, and they are too. So it's almost like the cells divide into the next generations.
Nice.
And they sing with us. So the first group that we worked with at BAM was the Young People's Chorus of New York. I adore these children.
With
and then we just
worked
with
a
lovely choir in Minneapolis. So everywhere we go on tour, we're going to work with the young girls. So it's so beautiful because all over the stage are lying down on our side little cells.
Yeah.
And I just love that idea of passing on, you know, this energy and way of thinking about things to younger people.
Well, and you know, I'm sure you're aware there are now a couple of generations of younger singers in the contemporary classical and experimental worlds who see you as like an iconic figure, but also in the pop world, you know, yeah. You have singers like Caroline Polachek from Chairlift and Meryl Garbus from Tune Yards and this French singer Camille, and you know, they all like name check you constantly.
that's wonderful.
I mean,
thank you.
Do you keep up with any of this stuff?
Not too much. I mean, certainly. One person that I have kept up with is Björk, because we did a wonderful interview, I think it was for NPR, as a matter of fact, with Sarah Cahill, maybe
the
10
pianist,
years ago.
Yeah.
Somebody had said, Björk is singing Gotham Lullaby. This was in the late 90s, and I finally listened to it, and I thought that she had really found a very personal way of doing it, mm-hmm. So it was not like trying to, you know, do the way I do it. But she really kept the quality of the piece and the integrity of Gotham Lullaby. I mean, it really has that quality.
Yeah.
And so I wrote her a card. And then, you know, we were sort of going to have coffee or something like that. And it didn't work out until that interview. And we were both in tears at the end of the interview, because even the way that she was working when she was up in Iceland, you know, it reminded me so much of myself as a young person. You know, I put up the posters myself. I did mm-hmm. the programs myself. And she said that's what she did, and that she had heard Dolman music when she was 14 and just, you know, scratched the record, you know, kept on listening to it, listening, knew every note of the record. So it was just such a lovely thing, because I don't think her work is, you know, it's not, you know, exactly like mine, or, you know, you don't hear that as easily, but there's something about the spirit of it that's very close.
And you know, in some of her writing for chorus and stuff, you hear the sounds of a Dolman music, your classic record from the mid-70s. Yeah.
And she's a wonderful artist. And all these women that you talked about are also wonderful artists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she did Gotham Lullaby at Carnegie Hall, right?
Yes.
For, what was that? Was it your 40th?
It was the 40th.
Anniversary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she did it with the, what is the name of that string quartet from England?
I think I know
it's
the one you mean.
It's a man's name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Brodsky. The
Brodsky
Quartet.
I think she did it. I heard that she performed it the night of 9/11 in Europe.
Okay.
You know, just to sort of get the
tribute.
Feeling of New York,
you
know, the New York thing. So,
well, next performances here in New York are through Tuesday.
Yeah. Really looking forward to it. We're doing different choreography. So if you saw it at BAM, come on over. It's going to be different. And it's not the whole piece. It's sets of the music.
Right. Uh-huh. At Le Poisson Rouge, it's Meredith Monk and Vocal Ensemble. Meredith, it's always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
My
great
pleasure,
to see
John.
You.
Thank you so much.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast. That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.